Welcome to the College Audition Podcast with your host, nationally renowned college audition coach, Tim Evanicki.
Hey everybody, Tim Evanicki here with the College Audition, back again with another episode of the College Audition Podcast. My guest today is Josh Grissetti, assistant professor and co-head of musical theater at California State University, Fullerton. Thanks so much for joining us today, Josh.
Thank you for having me.
So the first thing that we always do on the podcast is get to know the person before the program. So if you could give us a little rundown of your career and training that sort of led up to your time at Cal State Fullerton.
Sure. The nutshell version is I grew up in Virginia and I took an interest to, you know, theater and singing and these things. And so I did a couple summer programs through the Virginia Governor's School for the Arts and Humanities. I did an opera program in Italy where we, you know, studied opera during the day and then performed them at night. I was in the ensemble, you know, in the training program there. And then I found this residential high school program at the North Carolina School of the Arts, which is now the University of North Carolina School of the Arts. And so I graduated high school there with a diploma in drama. And then I went on to the Boston Conservatory, where I got a BFA in musical theater. Then I moved to New York, and that was that. I booked some regional gigs for the first, you know, year and a half or so out of college, and then I stumbled into a TV series for ABC. It was called The Knights of Prosperity. It only ran one season. My mother watched it and loved it, but no one else did. So it didn't do that well, but it paid off college, which was a huge feat, because Boston Conservatory, as anybody knows, if they're paying attention, that's not a cheap school to go to. So that TV series really saved me in a lot of ways. And then, you know, off-Broadway and Broadway and national tours, you know, sort of follow that, an international tour. So my career kind of spanned across a lot of different things. You know, I did a little commercial, a little voiceover, a few film roles here and there over about 17 years based out of New York. And then I moved to L.A., after the first national tour of Something Rotten, which I had done the Broadway company and then went on tour with it for a year and then ended up on the West Coast and decided, hey, I actually like it out here. I think I'm going to stay. So I did that. And while I was out here, the pandemic hit. And that's when I decided to use the time as wisely as I could since the industry was shut down. So I went back to school and got my MFA, knowing that one day that would allow me to teach in higher ed. What I didn't expect is that as soon as I was done with the MFA, that this job, you know, in my backyard here at Cal State Fullerton, which is just outside of Los Angeles, that this musical theater, they needed the program head of a musical theater program. So the timing sort of just happened. I didn't expect to be in academics this soon, but here I am, you know, co-head of this program alongside Marty Austin Lamar, who was formerly at Howard University running their musical theater program. So the two of us came in together this year to redesign the Cal State Fullerton musical theater program. So here we are.
Wow. So funny story for you, when we were putting the podcast recordings on my schedule and things, and your headshot came up and we were sending it off to the designer, I'm sitting in my living room working. And as I'm looking at your headshot and designing, I look up and your face is also on my television because I was watching The Good Fight, which it was a very strange moment for me because I was just typing about you and uploading your headshot to our designer. And I look up and there you are in my living room as well. One of my favorite shows.
Yeah, and it's a great show. And yeah, I still, you know, one of the things that's important to me as a person working in academia now is that I really strongly believe you need to have at least some members of the faculty who are actively working in the industry still. Yeah. So still hammering out those auditions, still dealing with agencies and management and union deal, you know, all that stuff, so that they're not teaching you things from, you know, 20 years ago when they were doing this stuff,
right,
that they're still current in the trends and standards of the industry so that they know what to tell you is going on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's important to me. And I was very fortunate to do that little episode of The Good Fight. And I can tell you this, the best way to get hired for a series that shoots in New York is to move to Los Angeles. That's when they
that
all want to hire
sense.
You. Total
course,
sense.
That makes sense. Absolutely. I always tell my students when they're looking at faculty, because I make them research the faculty, they say, well, what questions do I ask? What do I look for? And I say, well, the faculty is really your first connections in the business. So make sure that they're contributing still to the industry more than just at that university. So that's a great point that you make. And I agree wholeheartedly. So you're a new face there, which is exciting. So when will students come in contact with you if they end up going there? What do you still teach? What are your responsibilities outside of just heading up the program?
I mean, it shifts probably year by year. But right now, I teach the sophomores and the seniors. And they really brought me on as sort of the industry component of their faculty equation. So in that sense, I'm sort of set up to deal with the seniors more than the underclassmen, part of building that bridge from the academy to the industry. But that said, as we sort of develop this program, and redesign it, I thought it was important that I also see what's going on in the lower division, and see how we can best shape things from that perspective. So I don't know that I'll always be teaching across the spectrum like this, but right now I am. Professor Lamar is also teaching seniors, but he also works with the juniors. So we're kind of trying to get as much information as we can from as many different groups of students as mm-hmm. we can right now. I'll also be directing in the spring a new workshop production of a musical. So those are kind of the duties that would be the interface you would see me in. I'll also be advising musical theater students over the next year. So effectively, because we're redesigning the program, we have the most sort of information about what's changing mm-hmm. and what students are going to need to take in the future and all that kind of mm-hmm. back end stuff. So the truth is, it's going to be hard to avoid me if you come here.
That's good to know, and a nice warning for the students as well. So as we start to talk about the program a little bit more, it's exciting to hear that you say you're redesigning the program. And I mean, I think you brought up to me that there aren't a whole lot of options for musical theater students on the West Coast. So, I mean, there are a couple of great programs, but certainly not as many as there are on the East Coast. So I'm excited to see what you're going to bring to the program. So as an introduction to the program, I ask all of my guests to give me their elevator speech, 60 seconds or less. Just sort of give us an overview of the program and tell us why students should be considering it.
Okay. I'm gonna say the most controversial thing first.
Okay.
Which is this. I do not believe, as someone who had a lot of scholarship money when he went through a conservatory program and still came out with over $100,000 of debt, I do not believe that there is any theater degree offered anywhere in the world that is worth $100,000 or more. I said what I said. And one of the reasons I have not taught for all these years, even though I've always been interested in teaching, was I have an ethical dilemma about it. And the ethical dilemma is it simply costs too much. And we know statistically it does not pay off that investment very often. And by very mm-hmm. often, I mean you're probably more likely to make money in a casino than make money as a professional performer. And there's nothing, you know, we shy away from this conversation in academics too often. And I am of the opinion that we should not, but we should face it head on because it's a real chronic problem. And to that end, how that connects to me working here, this is a state school. California is the largest state in the country. It has, you know, at least is one of them, and fifth largest economy in the world. It it's a big, you know, patch of land with a lot of potential students who are going to be fabulous musical theater performers one day. And to give them access to sort of world-class, you know, top-shelf musical theater training feels like a no-brainer. But to, not only to offer that here on the West Coast, but to do it for a fraction of the price that almost any other school can afford to offer is a huge selling point to me.
Mm-hmm.
And it allows me to sleep at night, you know, because I know, you know, for my MFA, I'll just compare it to my MFA degree. The amount of money I spent at a private school to get my MFA, one class there cost more than an entire semester for students here at Cal State. I'll just say that again. One class cost more than an entire semester at Cal State. That's because this system, the Cal State system, is designed for accessibility. It is designed to make sure people can afford to go to college and get the degree that they want, and one that will actually serve them. And so we came in sort of embracing that wholeheartedly and saying, well, what else can we do to make this even more accessible? What else can we do to make sure that kids are getting the same competitive, professionally minded training that you would get at a conservatory program? So we're calling it a conservatory style program within a state school, but we're actually very proud of that. So that's part one. Is look at the math, look at the numbers, because someone can offer you a $50,000 a year scholarship, but if they're charging you $100,000 a year to come in, then you have to look at the numbers at the end of the day. What is the net cost of this education? And I just believe you should keep it as low as possible, because mm-hmm. it will change your life on the back end. You're going to get out into the world, and when you have the difference between having $30,000 of debt or no debt compared to $100,000 or $200,000 of debt, you know, that could pay for your house, that could pay for six cars, that could pay for your wedding.
Right.
There's just a lot of other things that, even if you come from a really wealthy family that has that kind of money to burn, I can guarantee you there are better investments to make with that money, just on a very mm-hmm. practical level. And if banks knew that you could not... Well, if they knew that you could write that debt off in bankruptcy, they would never give you the money to go to school for musical theater. They wouldn't. But right. they know you cannot write that debt off in bankruptcy. It will be with you come hell or high water. So they are willing to give you whatever you need. Sure. $1 million. You got it. Have fun. You're going to pay it back. You know, so I just look at the whole system and I think, okay, the right answer is this should be more cost affordable. So that's part one. Now, part two is about the training itself, is we are designing this system, and this is not how it has been historically, so anybody who knows the Cal State sort of model before us coming in, you'll know that this is a switch, but what's very important to us is that you are getting singing, acting, and dancing training consistently all 4 years, all eight semesters, you know, private voice, all 4 years, all eight semesters. It's rigorous. You're maxing out on the number of units you can possibly take, which is typical of every musical theater program that I'm aware of.
Right.
Because you're teaching three art forms in 4 years, and that is a task that no other degree is attempting to do. So it's intense. And so you got to be ready for that. And if you're not ready for that, you know, we have a lovely BA program that's a little more, you know, accessible for people who just don't have the, you know, the time to put into a musical theater BFA. But it's all there. There's a lot of options in that way. But it's structured in a way that really, you know, it's affordable and it's effective. That's the bottom line.
Awesome. Great. So let's chat a little bit, about some of the changes that you're looking at making, because I mean, I certainly know just from my own research and sending students there in the past to audition what the program, as you said, has been historically. But what are some of the things that you're tackling as a fresh face and a fresh set of eyes on the program?
Well, it seems like a no-brainer. There should be singing, acting, and dancing in all semesters, all 4 years. But that's not what they were able to provide before.
Okay.
And part of this was because of this old model that they've been working on, working under for, 30 years, which is a traditional old school cut program where you come in and they take, anywhere between 60 and 80 kids, and you work on musical theater loosely, mainly acting in your first year. You didn't sing at all in your first year. And then in the second year, you got one class where you could start singing. You were taking dance classes the whole time and acting classes. And then at the end of your sophomore year, you had this jury, and they cut effectively anywhere between 60 and 80 kids down to about 12. And that's a massive cut.
Wow.
And that's a brutal cut. And I call that sort of it's a fear-based pedagogy, fear-based learning, because you're telling kids two things simultaneously. One, you need to be vulnerable. You need to embrace failure, embrace making mistakes so that you can learn from them, creating this safe space so that you feel that you can do all of that. And then at the same time say, but if you keep doing that, at a certain point, you're just going to be cut from the school. That's there's just no healthy way to do that. And a lot of musical theater programs had a similar kind of structure back in the 80s and early 90s, maybe. But that has since gone away, and very few schools still do that. And it was sort of shocking to us to find that that was still happening here. And it seemed, as soon as we started asking about it, everybody on faculty was like, oh, yes, we know we need to get rid of that. We're just waiting for someone to do the heavy lifting to do it. So we just came in and ripped the Band-Aid right off and said, okay, day one, that has to go away right now. So starting in the fall, starting this fall, we're going to be auditioning for the freshman class, and we will take in 12 students from the top, and we'll dedicate ourselves to those 12. And as long as they want to continue in the program of their own volition, we will be there to support them and see them to the end of it. And that is a radical cultural change on this campus. And I know it seems like, shouldn't that have already been done? And you're right, it should have. But here we are, and I want to be as transparent as possible. That's one of the big changes we're making. But to do that, now you've got these 12 students who are going to come in freshman year. The way the structure was set up, they didn't have anything to step into. They weren't going to start singing for a year, and it's like, who's going to come to a musical theater program if they're not, didn't I come here to study singing and acting and dancing? So step two of this process was to make sure that the freshmen were stepping into a program that was going to fulfill all of that. So now we've redesigned it so that they will. And that's a radical shift for this group. Beyond that, we're sort of peeling back the layers of sort of, casting policies and how they've been implemented here. Play selection committee stuff, for like what shows have they been doing? We are in Southern California. We are a federally designated Hispanic serving institution. And yet you look back at the season selections and very little has been done to actually serve the, Hispanic population of this area. And so there's stuff like that where it's just like, oh, okay, these are actually kind of easy fixes. It's just about putting these on the table and discussing them and getting an action plan together. So all of that work is kind of pouring into this. We're adding courses in terms of diversity and inclusion across the spectrum. They're coming in the GEs, the general ed classes. They're coming in the departmental classes. We just voted to add a course that explicitly talks about theater in relation to diversity, equity, and inclusion, with different course options that students can choose to take in that arena. And that kind of thing. We're completely sort of investigating what the showcase model looks like. There is a showcase at the end of the program where we take the 12 students that we have to New York and do that whole thing. But the truth is that showcase model is failing, not here at Cal State Fullerton, but across the entire spectrum of musical theater training. There are just too many schools doing too many showcases, and agents and casting directors are overwhelmed and they cannot attend them all. And so we're, investigating an alternative to that that we think is going to be very effective, that will still involve a trip to New York and will still involve interacting with agents and casting directors. But that the fact that we're even opening that can of worms and having that discussion and trying to think forward rather than just doing what has been done for the sake of what's going to best serve the students. That's a radical shift,
yeah.
You know, probably for any school, but certainly for the history of this one. So so there's a lot of positive and heavy hitting stuff moving here.
That's awesome. So let's take a freshman coming to campus for the first time, and they're about to start their very first year at school. What does that track sort of look like for them starting their freshman year? What are they going to study? What classes are they taking?
So in the freshman year, as the new layout is mapped to be, they would take, it's actually, freshman year is probably the most balanced year because you're going to be getting, in the first semester, you're getting 2 acting classes, 3 dance classes, 2 singing classes, including your private voice. The other is music theory. And then a GE course is called Oral Communication of Literature, which is based in the theater division, but is a general ed course. GEs, just so you know, I'm sure you've talked about it on other podcasts with other folks, but any state school like this, and probably a lot of others, will have a general ed requirement, which is sort of the standard package that comes with every degree, no matter what department you're in. So those courses could be things in math and science and English and whatever. There's, I think, 5 different categories that they fall under. But one of our agendas was to find as many of those GE courses that align with the musical theater program, whether that's in, you know, dance anatomy or you know, the physics of sound or something mm-hmm. as simple as stress management or personal finance, stuff like that, that you don't think of as musical theater directly. But, you know, the number of alumni we hear saying, I wish someone had told me just how to balance a budget, you know, for myself, how to create a personal budget, stuff like that, to be able to say, oh, we have these classes. You can take them as part of the general ed package. They're completely elective. You can choose them or not. You know, if your dad is a finance guy and you just have plenty of that advice already in your life, then you might not need it. But the truth is, most people don't know much about how the banking system works at all and all that kind of. So to offer classes like that we know will help you in life, and we know theater folks in the, you know, outside of academia, we are notoriously bad with money. Like actors, artists in general, we don't like thinking about that kind of stuff. That's not generally how our brains work. Not all, but for many. And so to offer that kind of stuff is important to us. So you'll have all those options. But anyway, in the first year, that would be later in the program. In the first year, you'll be taking some of the more basic ones. And this one, Oral Comm, comes out of the theater arena. And then in the spring of the freshman year, you would sort of take a similar track. You'd continue with your 2 acting courses. You continue into a sort of sight reading and ensemble singing class. And you've got your 3, you know, ballet, tap, jazz, standard dance electives in there. And then also you'll have musical theater history. And the reason for that is that we really think that you need to start with the history, study the genres, study those shows, so that when you start performing them in the subsequent years, you have some base knowledge of where those shows came in the history of the canon, how the canon even came into existence, what musical influence created the musical theater sounds that we know of today, and how diverse the roots of those, you know, musical genres are, and giving credit where credit is due to the communities that created those sounds. Like, all of that comes in the package of musical theater history to us, and all of that would be delivered in the first year. So that's the overview, the bird's eye view of the freshman experience now.
Yeah, and as far as in addition to the classes, obviously a lot of students always want to know what kind of performance opportunities there are as part of the program. So can you talk us through that? How many productions a year? Are there student-led productions? What's available?
So there are a lot of productions on campus through the theater and dance division, including, you know, oh gosh, if you include like student series that happen inside of directing classrooms, the number is probably higher than we even have a count for. But we know that there are officially something like 32 productions a year. through theater and dance. It's a massive amount. We have three theaters in a new theater building that was built. I'm not actually sure when it was built, but probably in the last 15 years. That's the side of the building that I'm in, thankfully. There is an old building that has two additional spaces. So that's five theaters within the, you know, CPAC structure, the performing arts structure here on campus. So, and they're all active all year long through theater, dance, and music. So we have a full-on music department too that's pretty fabulous. Mm-hmm. So on the main stage, we have two musicals, two major main stage musicals, and two to three plays, including one devised theater piece that happened on our main stage. And then the three smaller theaters, we have what's called the studio series. And that fluctuates year to year, how many productions go into that series. But you could have as many as three or more in a semester. And those are more intimate plays and intimate musicals. Where, for example, we're doing SpongeBob this fall as a main stage. And then I think in the spring, we're doing Cabaret, but we're going to put it in one of the smaller venues to make it a more intimate sort of space, in the way that, you know, Studio 54 did Roundabout's production. You know, it works best in a small venue. So we'll play with it depending on what the material is. But that's a lot of performance opportunity, specifically mm-hmm. for the BAs. We are NAST accredited, which is just kind of academic jargon for most students. But the effect of that is that there is a requirement that all students participate in at least one production, fully staged, you know, fully produced production while they're on campus. But in addition to that requirement, we actually require four productions in the curriculum itself. So you're guaranteed you're going to be in four, you know, productions on campus throughout your 4 years. The likelihood is those will be stacked in your later years, not in your freshman year. But, you know, that's always flexible for the right circumstance. So there's a lot of performing opportunities. We have an MFA directing program here. So you may have opportunity to work with the MFA directing students, who some of them are young and have just, you know, recently been in grad school. And some of them are in their 60s and they just came back because they wanted to, you know, to hone their directing skills. So you really have a really wide range of skill sets and experience levels to play with there while you're in your undergrad.
Mm. Wow. Now, you had mentioned that the program is pretty jam-packed as far as credit hours go, and you're almost at your maximum. So can you speak a little bit to the opportunities to minor in other areas, as well as is there a possibility to double major?
There is, and students do it, but I'll be very honest and say I have no idea how they do it, because it is so intense. But, you know, I couldn't do it.
I wouldn't want to.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to. But, you know, I just heard one of my seniors tell me, I'm minoring in blank, blank, blank. And I'm like, how on earth? She's minoring in something, doing the full musical theater program, and she works in the mornings before she comes into classes. She gets to work at 6. She's here all day from, you know, whatever time she gets in to the time the shows end, which are, you know, 10:30, 11 at night. Goes home, sleeps for a few hours, and gets up and goes back to work at 6. And she's chosen to do a minor on top of all that. Mm. Like, we have some diehard students here.
Bless her.
Yeah, but that said, it is not recommended, because not many students can handle all of that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, never say never. So part of our whole philosophy is every student is unique. Every student is different. So we can have standards and trends, and we can make recommendations about certain things, like should I take on a minor? We would recommend that you not, because we think it's too much for most students. But that's not to say that some students can do it, you know. Mm-hmm. And if you want to try, you know, God bless you. Like, we're not going to stand in the way. We'll just advise you as best we can and honor whatever decisions you make.
And what are the other minors that would be available within the performing arts arena? Is there an MT minor? Is there a film minor? What is there available?
So there is a whole separate film and television program that to my knowledge, you cannot minor in. But again, I'm new. You know, I came on just this year. So there's a lot of details about the how one minors and what they can minor in that I just don't know of because it hasn't been pressing on me to know yet. So I can't specify which programs are even eligible for that. What I know is that in the theater division itself, what's complicated is that we don't actually have individual BFA tracks. We have one BFA track that's called the Theater BFA, and then it has concentrations in musical theater, acting, or devised theater. And then there's a BA in theater that's completely separate, and that's where you could have an emphasis in the BA in playwriting, directing, technical theater, theater ed, stuff like that. So there are non-performance-based BA tracks, but all of the performance specialities come in the form of a BFA concentration. And again, this is a lot of just academic jargon. Most kids just, they want to study the thing they want to study. They don't really, you know, the how it's formatted is a little arbitrary, to be honest. But that said, there is not officially any minor in the theater division. We have concentrations, we have emphasis, we don't have minors. If you're getting a minor, it would be in something outside of the theater division.
Great. Awesome. Let's chat through, you spoke a little bit about your co-head of the program as well, but if you could sort of introduce us, quote unquote, to some of the other main faculty members that students would be interacting with.
Yeah, so the other co-head of the musical theater program is Marty Austin Lamar. Again, he was formerly at Howard University out in D.C. And just a fantastic leader, leads with sort of heart, spirit, and rigor, which is such a great combination, I think. So often there can be this sort of old school faculty member when we think of theater faculty who lead with rigor, and that's what they focus on sort of solely, and they forget to put any empathy and any heart and any humanity beyond that into the training. And that can, you know, that can become what we might in the 21st century call abusive. You know, and I think many of us who trained, you know, a few decades ago or more, we lived through that and we just expected that to be the norm. And now this generation has really challenged us to say, should that be the norm? Is there a better way? Right. And I'm just really proud to say that Professor Lamar and I are just so on the same page on that and coming at this with, no, I think you can have rigor and empathy hand in hand. And in fact, they kind of need to go hand in hand because empathy without rigor becomes this sort of squishy training, you know, and rigor without empathy becomes abuse. And so it is a fine line, but one that I think we can all learn to walk together. And he's just fantastic at that. He comes from more of a music background than I do. So he has led like gospel choir sort of situations and worked for a church in that respect in DC, a big gospel church choir that he led there. So he has a whole nother viewpoint than I do, which is just a great sort of compliment for the two of us balancing each other out. He's also been in academia much longer than I have, probably, you know, a dozen years or so. And I'm new to academics and I just came from the industry more recently. So like, that's a kind of a nice compliment to one another as well. We have a team of lecturers who are part-time faculty who teach private voice, who teach some of the lower division musical theater courses. There is a whole acting department and head of directing that you'll encounter while you're a student in the musical theater program, including what was not in the previous program but is now in the new program that we're creating. There is a required course in acting for the camera. And again, we're 26 miles outside of Los Angeles. I don't think you can have... Honestly, I don't think any program in the 21st century, whether you're teaching musical theater or not, I don't think any program can afford not to have at least a course or two on camera acting, just because those worlds are colliding more and more every year. The unions are going at each other more and more because those worlds are merging. We're all heading toward digital content in the future, so it makes no sense to not give people the experience of being in front of a camera. So that's baked into the program now. You'll take it in your senior year. But that's new. So you'll encounter those faculty now, too. The guy teaching that, one of my favorites, his name is John Short, who has done a ton of TV work. But if you're a musical theater nerd, you'll also know John Short's voice because he was the original, I think he was the original Tom Sawyer in Big River. Yeah, wow. Which is just a fun fact. That means I was listening to him on that cast recording when I was a kid. I always forget which one he is, Tom or Huck Finn, whichever the main kid was.
I never remember.
I know, they're interchangeable. But anyway, he was that guy. So he has a history with musical theater as well, which is great. You know, as a guy who has worked across musical theater and television, I actually think it's just critical that people know, have the tool set to do both. And so we're going to strive to give you that here. But great. you have voice and speech faculty, you know, some really wonderful people, and you can go onto the Fullerton website, which is just fullerton.edu, mm-hmm. and look up the theater faculty and you'll get all of them. We have a nice mix of people who are, strong academics and people who have had strong sort of, footprints in the industry. There's a really nice sort of smattering of both, which I think is pretty great.
Great. You're using some words that the people who normally listen to this podcast haven't heard before. When you're referring to the lower division students, what does that mean?
Oh, well, I just mean it's really lower division courses and the students, I guess, who are in those courses versus upper division. All that means upper division is third and fourth year, and lower division is first and second year. Yeah.
Just wanted to make sure that was clarified before we went on. So lots of people who aren't from Southern California or have never been sometimes think that all of Southern California is just big city Los Angeles. Can you talk a little bit about where Fullerton is and sort of the area? We like to get to know a little bit about student life. Eventually, the students are going to want to leave the campus and do things in the area. So if you can talk a little bit about what that's like.
Yeah. So again, 26 miles outside of Los Angeles. So if you are looking for the sort of classic Hollywood experience, LA is right here in your backyard, and all of what that entails. The cool thing about this area, whether you're in Los Angeles proper or you're out here in Fullerton or anywhere around this area, is within a day, you could wake up and watch the sunrise on top of a mountain in the snow. You could come down, have lunch in the desert where it's literally boiling hot all year long, and then watch the sunset over the ocean on the beach. Like, Southern California is a magical place when it comes to what the area is like. So let me just start there. And the weather is sort of ideal all year long. It's not fair to the rest of the world, but here we are. So there's that. Outside, Fullerton is actually a pretty small little town. It has this really adorable downtown area filled with, you know, what you would expect. Shops and restaurants and bars and whatnot, but I don't know what else to call them other than adorable. It's just that it's somehow quaint. It makes me feel, if you've been to Colorado, some of those cool, like, kind of hippie-ish, but also classic and modern all at the same time. There's just a lot of things happening in a small amount of space. Downtown Fullerton gives me that vibe. And so if you're staying around the area, you know, that would be probably your immediate playground, you know, within steps of the school. But yeah, if you wanted to venture out from there, we're 15 minutes away from Disneyland. I mean, you know, if your apartment's in the right spot, you'll see the fireworks at night. Wow. Yeah, there's another theme park called Knott's Berry Farm, which is, you know, if you're familiar with any of that brand of theme park, that's right here. Then if you're willing to go to go up to L.A., you've got Universal Studios and Six Flags is just north of L.A. So we have a lot of entertainment around. There's in addition to L.A. having something like 300 small theaters. Like, it's insane the number of, and I'm talking like 99 seat theaters. Yeah, that's a big LA feature. But outside of LA, where we are, there's another, there's a couple big musical theater regional houses that are equity houses. They're, one is called La Mirada Theater, which is Kathy Rigby and Tom McCoy's company. And then there's Musical Theater West down in Long Beach, just south of us. There is a company called 3D Theatricals that is a split company with equity, non-equity. And then further south, an amphitheater called Moonlight that is a full non-union company. I think they have a couple union contracts, but a lot of students work at some of these theaters in their summer shows, or sometimes they'll even swap out doing one of our productions to go there and get credit for that if they can figure out how to do that schedule-wise. So there's a lot of opportunity in that way too, right here, if you're still based out of Fullerton, because it's kind of a nice ideal middle ground to all of those theaters.
Let's change gears now and start talking about the audition process. So with all of the changes and everything that you're bringing to the program, are you changing the audition process in any way?
Well, yes, because there was not really an audition process until we got here. The audition process was through a jury process that happened while you were already in school. And so that's what's ending. And we're replacing it with a, you know, what students are most used to, which is, you know, we're going to have a pre-screen, you know, that you can submit by video. We're joining forces with dozens of other schools to join the Paper Mill Playhouse construction of the Common Musical Theater pre-screen. So the same video that you make for all of those programs, you're welcome to send to us. It'll have the exact same requirements, which I believe is one monologue, two contrasting songs, and anything dance that you want to show us. And we will create a dance audition. We're planning to do a two-tier dance audition, one for people who are experienced dancers and have taken that training, and one for people who are not, for people who are more actors who move, which as an actor who moves myself and a guy who's made a career in musical theater for almost 20 years without being a dancer, it was important to me to make sure that that track existed here and that we're celebrating the diversity of skill sets that students come in with. So if you're a dancer, we've got a fantastic dance program that you can exceed the musical theater classes and go study with the dance division if you're that skilled at it. But if you're not, you can stay with us in the musical theater realm, and then we'll even offer you some movement courses that'll start swapping out electively toward the end of your training, so that if dance is not where you want to live, but you want to experience some other types of movement training, we'll give you that too. Go ahead.
Is this the first year that you're going to be pre-screening?
This is the first year we're going to be pre-screening.
Oh, great. Yeah. And historically, how many applicants have you been receiving? Do you even know, being that it's your first year, how many applicants have you been receiving for the program?
We have no way of knowing because we haven't done it before. So we know that what we know is that they typically take about half of the students who ask to come, and that's across the whole university. And that's before there was any sort of pre-screen. Right. And to me, I just have to be honest, I would have been nervous about entering a program where there wasn't a pre-screen. When I was young, I would have wanted to know sort of where I was and that I was selected for the program. Like, I would have wanted that sort of affirmation going in. So I may have steered clear from a program that didn't do that. But another student may have done the opposite. So who knows how this will affect our numbers.
Well, we're talking about the videos you send in advance of a live audition. So are you doing live auditions secondary to the pre-screen auditions?
Yes. This year, because of COVID and everything, we will have a virtual option. But that would still be a live virtual option. It'd be a Zoom thing. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, we'll have one that is on campus for people to actually come see the campus and meet us in person and actually see the spaces and all that good stuff.
Great.
Yeah.
So what is the target number for an incoming class that you're looking for?
We really believe that keeping it small is important for the training and just for the outcomes. And so we are looking at 12 students.
Great.
And it can be flexible. You know, if we only have 10 in a given year that we're really excited about, we could do that. If we are excited about 14, we could do that. The important thing is that we are excited about them and that they're excited about us, you know, and that it's an intimate training setting, you know, this takes so much time. And it takes individual time of you being able to cut your teeth on singing, acting, and dancing. And to give you that experience, I just don't know how you do it without a faculty of thousands and millions of spaces and stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know how you do it with huge student numbers.
Mm-hmm. So Josh, how is a student going to stand out to you during either the pre-screen or the live audition process? What are the qualities that you're looking for one of those offers for one of those students?
You know, yes, it's great if you know, all the little tools that you've got access to. So the more believability you can bring to your acting, of course, the more intonation and range you can show us with vocals, sure. You know, if you've got a double or a triple pirouette, great. But the truth is, those are all secondary to me to people who are hardworking and enthusiastic, and I can see that in the audition room. You know, I think the death of theater training is people who are sort of blasé about it or apathetic, like, yeah, I could do this, I could do that. It's too hard. It's mm-hmm. too hard. You have to love it so much that you can't stop working toward it, you know? And if you can show us that in the room, that's more personality and just sort of work than it is anything else. That's huge. And the other thing is people who are willing to just be themselves. I think too often, especially when we're young, we don't believe that we have enough to offer. We don't believe that we are enough, you know, that anybody would care to see us speaking or singing. And so we try to be somebody else when we speak and sing in front of people and be bigger than ourselves somehow. And that's just not, A, it's not true. And B, it's not effective. What's effective is you coming in, not cocky or arrogant, but coming in with the confidence to say, I am proud of what I have to offer. I know I have a voice that's powerful and willing, and I'm willing to share it. And I'm just willing to give that to you, you know, here and now. Like, that, as simple as that sounds, it's really hard to accomplish, especially at a young age. So the closer you can get to that, too, that level of just being able to breathe and be yourself in the space, that is so appealing.
All right. Well, last question for you today. What are some things that you are looking forward to this year?
Oh, I tell you, the biggest thing I'm looking forward to is how much stronger the students of this program are going to be when they leave here. And that starts even now, even before we have 4 years, you know, with students, but we're seeing it even in one semester. The changes students are making when you meet them where they are and give them a safe space to create and a safe space to explore and to fail. And to pick themselves up and learn, and just watching how much freer some of these students are becoming, that's the stuff that every time it happens, in little aha breakthrough moments day to day that are not, you know, monumental. They're little. They're nuanced, but they add up to something powerful. But every time it happens, I just think, God, that's the reason why I wanted to teach, is to see these moments. And so that's what I'm most excited about. Seeing that over and over again.
Well, if there's any students or parents out there that want to learn more about this program and all the exciting new things you're doing with it, how can they best get in touch?
Easily go to fullerton.edu, F U L L E-R-T-O-N, fullerton.edu. Go to the theater page. You can easily find me, Josh Grizzetti, or Marty Austin Lamar. We're probably the two that you want to reach out to if you want to talk about the musical theater program. But you can also explore the other programs, the acting and the devised theater program, the BA in theater, and all the faculty will be listed there. Anybody mm-hmm. that you're interested in talking to, we're more than happy to communicate. So reach out anytime. But that's probably the starting place, is to check that out.
Mm-hmm. Well, Josh, it's been great to sit down and chat with you today and get to know more about this program. And I'm excited to hear about all the changes. And we will look forward to seeing your face around here often.
Awesome. Anytime. Awesome. Anytime. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Yes, absolutely. Thanks so much. Bye-bye.
For more information on the exciting training, workshops, and masterclasses offered by The College Audition, please visit us online at www.thecollegeaudition.com or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, YouTube, and TikTok.